Welcome to the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host, Tony, and on the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis. I'm in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and this is show number 27 coming to you guys after an extended break. So glad to be back. My man, Brawley, what's up, man?
You know, just buzzing after three wins on the bounce. Can't ask for more than that, so I'm a happy hammer today. How about you?
I think maybe we should stop doing the podcast now that we haven't done the podcast in over a month and we've gotten nonstop results other than the Liverpool, which we'll get into a little bit. But I mean, I've been great. I'm feeling fantastic doing this podcast right after 3 points against Villa. And I think we have so much to talk about this week.
There's an absolute ton for us to talk about. You could start with the fact that we've gotten three wins in a row. I mean, we haven't lost since the Liverpool game, is that correct?
So, yep.
I mean, we got a draw in the FA Cup, which we'll talk about later, and just nothing but happy days for us right now. It's a little strange. I don't know what to do with my hands. I don't know what to do.
As we speak at this moment, we are fifth in the table with 17 points, and we are 1 point off of Champions League, and it is pretty funny because I remember our opening podcast of the season. I believe I was the one who predicted us to be top half of the table if we get through the tough stretch of and get a result. And it was you, X, and Dave all were saying that I was crazy. And here we are. So waiting for my apology letter. Dave and X, same from you guys. You can send it to my Pennsylvania address. Go ahead.
I don't think me, Dave, and X were the only ones calling you crazy at that point in time before the season had started, in our defense. And there is also a lot of season left to go. Just because we're fifth now doesn't mean it is looking good, I will say. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like I'm rooting for us to slide down the table or anything. A lot of football left to be played, and I am over the moon with the way we've been playing. But there's a lot of football left to be played. So let's not pull the cart before the horse here.
I don't want to come off as fickle, but I was very scared, I will admit, after the first two games when we looked horrendous against Newcastle, which we did. We looked terrible. And the Arsenal game where I thought we were unlucky. So coming after those first two games, I was thinking, damn, they were all right. But, you know, getting the results against Wolves and Leicester and then those three crazy matches against Liverpool, City, and Spurs. And now here we are getting into the quote-unquote easier stretch. And we haven't really made it look too easy, but now 9 points out of nine. So, I mean, we're looking like a really damn good team. And when we haven't been playing well, we still got results. And that's the difference from this team versus other years.
Yeah, the Newcastle game was horrendous. It took me back to Burnley away a few years ago, Cardiff away a few years ago. Yep. There were some terrible, terrible performances. And then, as you said, Arsenal, I thought we actually deserved to at least get a draw out of the game, but probably we were the better team. Yep. But today, I actually thought we were not very good. I mean, I thought it was our worst performance since the Newcastle game. I genuinely think that. I don't think we played a worse game than that. I mean, we scored inside 2 minutes of the first half and inside 45 seconds of the second half. And for some reason, after we scored both times, we just sat off and we wanted to not go at them anymore, which I didn't understand at all. So I don't want to get into the game right this second, but I think I put out a tweet earlier this year after the Arsenal game, I believe, and I said, good teams find ways to win and bad teams find ways to lose. And that's sort of shifted now. Today we put in a not so great performance, got some luck, but a not so great performance, and we won. So maybe we are turning into a decent team. I don't want to say we're a great or a good side right now, but we're certainly good teams win that game, and we found a way to win. So take of that what you will, but I mean, 3 points is 3 points.
If you look at the way we ended last season, right, and we ended last season pretty strong. We didn't invest anything into the side, really not. Kufau was a really good signing for cheap. And Benarama, which he came on today and played very, he got the assist there on Bowen's header.
Yep.
But other than that, we really have not invested anything into the side. And we're now finally hitting that stride where we played well at the end of the last season. And I think the biggest, most frustrating thing about the whole investment conversation that we had at the beginning podcast of this season and the off-season podcast and, you know, where we thought we would finish in the table podcast, blah, 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 blah. You know, we're just a few pieces off from being a very, very strong, solid side. And I think that still stands. I think a few additions in January, if they actually invest, and I think we could be in a really good spot in the table.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you already said it, you look at the table now, we're sitting fifth. We've got some a few more winnable games coming up, Man United being the next one, which will be a tough game for sure, but I don't fear Man United like I used to. So I think there's every reason we can start to wonder and start to think ahead and start to think, well, maybe we can push for Europe. At least top 10, I think, is definitely achievable now. What's nice is we're not looking beneath us. We're not looking behind us to the relegation zone. We're like last season, we were hoping for teams like Watford and Bournemouth to lose games. And now all of a sudden, we're hoping for Fulham to win today so Leicester can drop points so maybe we can gain some ground on Leicester. You know what I mean? I know I'm getting ahead of myself when I say that, but it's nice to not have to worry about the threat of relegation right now. Again, this is West Ham. Anything can happen. We can still get sucked down there. But it's nice that we're looking up and not down.
I think for me, it's one of those things where we talk about, oh, geez, how do I put this? Some stability, right? How many seasons now have we just been in and out of relegation battles, maybe 15th, maybe 12th, blah, 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 blah. Rather than shooting for Europe, I would just love maybe one or two seasons in a row where we could just have a nice 9th, 8th, 10th finish, top half, and be comfortable come March. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be sweating it out in April and May anymore. I don't think it's unrealistic, especially with these owners not putting anything into the side. I don't think that Europe is a realistic goal. I don't think it's a realistic aspiration. I think if they invested more, it could be. But I think a nice, solid, comfortable finish every season where we're not scared, where we're not table watching. I would love to have that. Just peace of mind for at least two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, when you start to look at things and the way this season's shaking out, I think there's – I wouldn't say it should be a goal, but I think there's a chance that we could push for – a top seven finish. I mean, I don't think that's out of the realm of dreamland right now. Like, I wouldn't say realistic. That's probably not the right word. But if we keep going the way we are, there's a shot that we could be in with a shout of Europe. And I think, yeah, it would be great. If you, and again, right now, I don't know, it'd be tough. But if you offered me ninth right now, if you offer me eighth right now, I would be tempted to take it, like if so that we finish the season in eighth. But I don't know. I feel like, and again, this is why fans are so fickle. I mean, you look at that hopometer at the beginning of the season. West Ham fans were all doom and gloom. You were probably one of the few that was not doom and gloom. And now look at us. We're sitting in fifth after 10 games played. It's only 10 games played. I usually don't even look at the table until Christmas. That's my rule of thumb. I don't put any stock into the table until Christmas. But you look at us sitting in fifth place, we're 4 points off top of the league. I mean, that...
Stop. So let me... I just want to... What's the word? Taper expectations, because this is kind of what I was referring to. I disagree with you. I don't think that Europe's out of the picture. I don't think that if they keep playing extremely well and extremely organized, I don't see why they couldn't. I think for me is I just don't want to see people's hopes get shattered for all of a sudden we're playing well, sitting fifth, 10 in the tape, 10 games in, and people are saying, well, why can't we do this? I think a realistic approach would be like, hey, let's try to keep this form going. Let's get excited. Let's see the team play well. But, you know, I think 10th, and I'm sticking with my prediction, top half finish, but, you know, I don't think Europe still. I want it. I don't think so.
Who knows? It's only 10 games into the season. So I think we can kind of talk about the game now.
Yeah, sure.
Starting with the lineup, I was shocked to see Mikael Antonio starting. And I, you know, the way he was playing, you should be excited for him coming back into the team. But I thought it was absolutely the wrong decision and so harsh on Sebastian Allaire to be dropped for Mikael Antonio. And then I was also gutted to see Pablo Fornal starting over Saeed Benrahma. I, again, quote-unquote, don't change a winning team, blah, 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 blah. Fornals has been good this season, and it's so harsh on him to want to drop him and so many people to want to drop him. But I just think Benrahma offers you that little bit more, and maybe you can even rotate him, Benrahma, Fornals, and Bowen, kind of interchangeable, give one guy a rest and kind of rotate. That's not really Moyes' style. But I just think David Moyes is way too reliant on Mikael Antonio, and you got to let Allaire earn his stuff. And I think it was really, really disappointing to see us want to rush Mikael Antonio. Antonio wasn't even on the bench on Sundays when we played last.
Right.
Wasn't even on the bench. Why would we risk him? I don't understand that. And you could tell Mikael Antonio was not the Antonio at the beginning of the season
today.
I
thought he played soft today.
He just looks scared. He looks scared to sprint.
Yep, 100%.
And understandable, right?
And when that's the biggest, no disrespect to Mikael, but when that's the biggest reliant, like the biggest piece of your game is not shooting, the biggest piece of your game is not finesse, the biggest piece of his game is being a freaking powerhouse, a sprinter, a just incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
So if you're playing like what's the name, Tinkerbell, and you're playing soft and timid, that it's not where you're not playing to your full potential, and you're a hindrance. And I think that's what he was today. And that's no disrespect to him, because I just don't think he was ready to come back, or at least to start.
Yeah, I mean, there was towards the end of the half, I remember that there was a long ball forward that I think, early in the season, before he got hurt, he gets to that ball 10 out of 10 times. It was a long ball down the line. Yep. And he just kind of gave up on it and was like half-heartedly running after it. And you could just tell that he's not ready. He's not fully fit and ready to go.
It's funny, though. Half-hearted Mikael Antonio run is still quicker than most. But it wasn't full steam ahead.
Yeah, like normally he gets to that ball and he clearly wasn't up for it today. Again, which I think is Moyes' fault. I think the smart thing to do, the cautious thing to do, would have played Allaire, a guy who scored you a great goal last week, who put in a pretty good performance against Sheffield United. And why? I just don't understand risking Mikael Antonio, a guy you know is injured, who has a habitual muscle injury every season. You can count on one muscle injury from Mikael Antonio. Why you'd want to risk him in this game, I just don't understand it. And it was so harsh on Allaire. I can't begin to tell you. I thought Moyes really, really dropped the ball there on those two starting in the lineup.
The toughest thing about West Ham's lineup right now is the fact that we're playing five in the back, and that just takes away one extra slot for an attacking player. It really just does. So we want to see Benrahma get in there without dropping for now, so I thought has been solid all year.
Yep.
We want to see Antonio get back in without dropping Allaire, who I thought did extremely well last week and scored that goal, you know. But we don't have room unless we adjust what we do, and that's what we did at halftime.
Yeah.
So, and we went to the four in the back. I think the five in the back is where we stay, and I think that's where we should. It's worked extremely well. It's got us draws against big sides, and we've won three games in a row now. Credit to Moyes. I know we'll get into it in a second when we actually talk about the game. We're talking about the lineup, but credit to Moyes for actually making adjustments.
Right.
But back to the main thing about the lineup is, I think the biggest sacrifice is you lose that attacking spot, and I don't think there's anything you can really do about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. So we can kind of get on with the game here. We scored inside 2 minutes from a corner, Augie getting his head on one. But right before that, Suchek had a great chance at goal, and it was blocked by, I can't think of who blocked it. But a really quick start to the game. I was really pleased with the way we started, and then to get Augie on the score sheet for the first time this season was really, really good to see.
Yeah, I was just excited. I wanted to jump in here real quick because we started off on fire. I mean, we were on top of them from the jump between taking it to them on the attack, getting that corner and scoring the goal. We were absolutely on top of them. You know what I mean? And then Augie got his head on it. I was thinking, and we actually right after I thought we did keep the foot on briefly. But then all of a sudden it just went, the game turned into this lull.
Yeah. The first 15 minutes was definitely all West Ham, I thought. And then for whatever reason, we decided to sit off and invite them onto us. I thought our only outlet forward was Antonio trying to hold the ball up, but he wasn't doing it. Couldn't get him involved. And then all of a sudden, it's just wave after wave after wave of Villa attack. And I thought Fabianski stood on his head, made a couple of good saves. And, they got their goal. Jack Grealish, who I think is a big talking point in this game, Jack Grealish.
Yeah.
I have never seen a player dive as many times in one game and get away with it as Jack Grealish did today. I mean, the referee, and the referee is a whole nother discussion in this game. I thought the referee was one of, and I've tried really hard not to be like this way to referees. The Bobby Madley interview that I did really opened my eyes to what it's like to be a referee. And I umpired.
Changed perspectives.
I umpired baseball. So, I mean, I've already had more sympathy than most towards officials. But I thought this was one of the worst refereeing performances I've seen in quite some time from a Premier League official. Not just the big decisions, not just the penalty, which I don't think was a penalty. Declan Rice is pulling the shirt, which leaves a decision to be made. But when you get your shirt pulled back, you don't fall forward. It's a dive. 10 out of 10 times, it's a dive. And then the VAR decision, which again, not the referee's decision. It's just the technology doing its thing. But I thought there were obvious fouls in the game on both sides for Villa and West Ham that weren't called. And then he called these little ticky-tack fouls like that were nothing, and Grealish leaving his feet in, going to ground early before there's even contact, and getting the foul every single time. I mean, Jack Grealish had this ref eating out of the palm of his hand.
The most frustrating thing about watching Jack Grealish is I think he's a hell of a player.
He was my man of the match today, actually.
Yeah, I think he's an incredible player. I think his passing skill, I think he's explosive on the ball. I think he's a fantastic dribbler. I think he's really good at getting players to dive in and chomp at him. I think he's a hella good player, and I can't take that away from him. However, I also think he's a cheat. You know, I don't think he needs to be. I think he's talented enough where he doesn't have to be that way. So I was really disappointed watching that because I have such high regards for him. The personality he is, staying at Villa, I think high regards for the way he plays in his actual performance, but the way he acts like a dive and a cheat, you know, it's embarrassing, and it's embarrassing for him.
I totally agree. I actually, my dad has a good friend of ours who works in the healthcare field, who is an Aston Villa fan from Birmingham, who we actually watched the game with. We were socially distant and masked. We were wearing our masks and stuff. But I watched a game with him at his house. He is infatuated for good reason with Jack Grealish. But even he was saying that Grealish was making a meal more than he usually does in this game, and it was very annoying to me to see that because he doesn't, like you said, he doesn't have to do it. I mean, he's got all the talent in the world. I think he is going. He could walk into. I think he would walk into every side in the Premier League right now, maybe apart from Liverpool. I think Liverpool might be the only one.
I don't think he walks, not Chelsea, no.
I think he could walk right into, he's every bit as good as Pulisic, and Pulisic's not starting right now, but I think he could walk into Chelsea's team easily.
No, not over Ziyech and Pulisic and Werner and all them, no. And Hudson-Odoi, no.
We will agree to disagree.
We're
there.
Gonna disagree. This is a landmark of moment.
Grealish
on this podcast.
Grealish is better than Ziyech, I would say too.
Mm, Okay, I don't agree with that, but that's all right. I don't think so. I think Ziyech is a much better passer and does much better movement. I think Grealish is a hell of a player. I don't think it sounds like a Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz situation where I don't think like one has to suck. I find Ziyech a much better player.
Yeah, and this isn't a Villa podcast. We don't have to talk about Grealish.
Or Chelsea podcast. Right, go ahead.
But as I was saying, he just doesn't have to do it. And it was really annoying. And I thought he was the best player on the pitch by a country mile. I think he blew every West Ham player off the park, maybe apart from Jared Bowen, who I thought had a great game. But needless to say, I was just disappointed with the diving, the constant diving you saw from yeah. Grealish. And for the referee to buy it every time. Like literally every time. It was just frustrating to see. So we ended the half at 1-1, and then, what do you know, David Moyes makes two substitutions at halftime, which I don't think I've ever seen that happen before. And they were the exact two substitutions that I would have made, the players being brought on. I was surprised he brought off Masuaku and went four at the back, which I thought was a sign of, let's take it to him. Let's not sit off. Let's go at him, which I really, really respected.
If you're going to take one of Crespo or Masuaku off, I think you take Masuaku off. If you're going four in the back, I feel like Crespo is a much better defender.
Yes.
Maybe doesn't offer as much going forward. So I think if you're going to go four in the back and you're going to look for Benrahma to provide that attacking spark that you lose from Masuaku playing wingback, I would definitely say that he's the one that's got to go because Crespo would be less of a defensive liability.
I totally agree. I think Cresswell is a better outright left back than Masuaku is. Not saying that either of them are ideal at left back, but I would prefer to see Cresswell playing left back.
It's funny how the pair of them make one left back.
Yeah, they do. You know? They really do.
Think Cresswell on his own week in and week out, you know, and I like Aaron Cresswell, but I don't think week in and week out that he's the player to take us forward at left back in a four. And I like Masuaku. I don't think that he's the player to take us forward with four in the back. But together, a half a left back and a half a left back makes a one full back. No pun intended. So, you know, that was terrible. Anyway,
I liked it.
Yeah, so them playing together, intertwining, overlap, underlap, the way that they get forward from that center back, left back, wing back position, I think works really well. So if you were to take one off, though, Cresswell has to be the one that's going to be better defensively.
I agree with that for sure. And then I think David Moyes had a little admission of wrongdoing by bringing off Antonio. I hope Antonio's not injured. I haven't seen anything. I don't know. Have we seen anything about Antonio?
No. I think he just recognized that he was not where he thought he was going to be at.
And that was what I was saying. So, I mean, if that is the case and he just was like, man, looks like I shouldn't have played Mickey and made the right decision by bringing Haller on and Saeed Benrahma on. Two substitutions that I was texting people at halftime saying these are the two subs I would make. I'd bring them both on, try to go for the game, but no way in hell does Moyes do that. And then lo and behold, he actually does make that double switch at halftime. And what do you know, within 30 seconds of coming onto the pitch, Saeed Benrahma has dribbled past a couple of guys, flicked a ball into the area, and a goal goes in off of a Benrahma assist. I mean, It took no time at all for that to happen.
I know you hate when I do this, but I want to jump forward for a quick second because I got a question that's relevant for you. So you know how we always say don't change a winning side?
Yeah.
I would like to argue that the second half team was the winning side. So I guess my question for you is quick, and then we'll go finish the game. I know you hate when I do this, but next week, do you start Haller and Benrahma over Antonio and Now I just switched up my whole thing. Fornals or Masuaku.
So your question is, do I start the starting lineup that started the first half or the second half next week?
Yeah, it was along the lines of, you know how we always say don't change a winning side? I would argue that the second half team was the winning side.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, I am not a person that says never change a winning team. I think I've said that you should adapt to the the team that you're playing against, and you should be flexible with what you can put out there. Don't rely on just a plan A. Have a plan A, plan B, plan C. So other people do say that a lot. X has always been a big guy that says, never change a winning team. If you're asking who I'm starting on Saturday against Manchester United, I'm not at training. It's so hard for me to say. If Antonio is anywhere close to the level that he was at today in training throughout the week, I'm playing Allaire, and I'm definitely starting Benrahma. Benrahma has to start going forward. I'm not one of these Algerian fans who just wants to see Benrahma play, and it always makes me laugh every time you see a Facebook post of Benrahma not starting. It's the Mad Reacts coming into the Facebook post. And Mad Reacts actually had more than likes on the most recent lineup post, which I thought was hilarious. But Benrahma has played a total of 45 minutes today, plus the 10 minutes, 15 minutes against Fulham, and he's got 2 assists in less than 90 minutes. I think you got to play him. I think you have to. Yeah. I think he, especially when Allaire's out there. Antonio Fornals works, that works. But when Allaire's on the pitch, you need someone that's going to create a spark. And I do think that player is Benrahma. Now, against Man United, I'm bringing Masuaku back in and playing the 5 at the back, though. I'm not sticking with 4 at the back. I'm going to go with 5 at the back and try to stymie Rashford, Greenwood, Cavani might start, and you got Martial. I'm going 5 at the back.
Okay, so since Brawley,
what about you? What are you doing?
Oh yeah, Benrahma's got to start over Fornals. I think the other reason I would do that is his pace. I think that I would like to see the ability to stretch. That's the Manchester United side. I'd be very concerned of sitting back, and then when we do get a chance to break, we're too slow in the buildup. And I think that would be a major downfall for us, because I don't think our buildup gets through their side. So I think that we'd have to hit them on the break, and I don't think that Fornals has enough on the break. However, he was also the one against Liverpool who broke through. So.
Yeah, both in consecutive seasons. He scored first, and we've lost the game 2-1 at Anfield. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so I'm this ain't the Fornals shit. Hate, but I would like to see a little bit more pace.
If Fornals is, I don't want to take anything away from Fornals. I actually think he's a really good player. I just think at this moment in time, it makes sense to start phasing Benrahma into the team, and not necessarily phase Fornals out of it, but let's find something that a rotation maybe or something to just liven things up going forward. And again, I don't want to harp on Fornals, but I just don't think he brings as much to the table attacking wise as Benrahma does.
The one thing that I personally forget, I don't know about you, but I personally tend to forget that Fornals is still a young bull. Like, he's 24.
Yep, he is very young.
That still blows my mind. You know, the way that we talk about him, like he's 27, 28, 29, like he should be playing like Lanzini, or he should be playing like Payet. You know, he's still young, 24. He's probably one of the younger ones in the starting 11. So, yeah. You know, I honestly forget that. I will have to admit.
Anyway, so we score real early in the second half. Bowen gets his head to it off of a Benrahma cross. And then again, we start to sit off and bring them onto us. I thought they dominated the second half, if I'm honest, much like they dominated most of the first half. I thought the two halves were eerily similar. I couldn't believe how similar the two halves were. And then Declan Rice is slightly pulling on the shirt, which again, I don't think Declan needs to do that, but it seems like most players when they're defending, they grab a little shirt, but man, the guy goes to ground forward,
just falls forward, like,
and he hurts himself by running his head into Declan's stud, and has to end up coming off the pitch because of the blood, and the referee gives a penalty.
And VAR confirmed it.
Well, here's the thing.
Or is it the non-clear and obvious error
Well,
thing? Or...
that's the issue here is can you can see on slow-mo replay that Declan Rice has a fistful of shirt and he goes to ground. Now, I would like to think that the referees have enough common sense to say if you're getting your shirt pulled backwards, you should be falling backwards, not diving forward. But obviously that didn't happen and there's not enough to overturn it. So, but I just think we got to be smarter here. The referee has got to stop falling for every little person going to ground and giving the foul. So, I mean, I don't have a major issue with them not overturning it. Obviously, as a West Ham fan, I would have ideally seen them overturned it. But it's just so another soft penalty given against us. And it's a tough pill to swallow. I mean, did you think it was a penalty or was it a dive?
Fuck no, it wasn't a penalty. And the reason I was pissy about it is I just had this conversation with my buddy Clay this weekend. This season, more than ever, it feels like everything's a penalty. Everything. And I think maybe this is – I'm going to go off on a mini tangent here. But maybe this is my gripe with the game and not just the Premier League, but the game itself. You know, there's so many times you see a really dinky, soft – yes, agreed that it was a foul and agreed that it was in the area and agreed that that equals a penalty. But where I get wound up is – sometimes you see all these little dinky fouls and you're like, you say to yourself, does this deserve a 101 from, was it 12 yards out? I say, no, I see that. I see there's some shit like that all the time. Like the dink last week or the Salah penalty, you know, or is it the Fulham penalty? That one too, where it's just like a little mini kick clip.
Yeah,
and you say to yourself,
were you referring to the Danny Welbeck penalty Brighton Liverpool last week? Is that one you were referring
that's
to?
That's the one I'm referring to. Yeah. Yes. You know, stuff like that. You know, or ours. How many times do you see so many soft penalties that you're like, wow, this really deserves a 101 with the goalkeeper? So, you know, I probably sound like an American idiot and I don't know football, but I think it's just one of those things that where I don't think that deserves a 101 with the goalkeeper. And then on top of that, we saw that in the MLS playoffs, we're talking about when the goalkeeper's barely off their line on the penalty.
Yep.
And that deserves a full retake when a player does a stutter step or a defensive player is like a half step in the box. Are those the rules? Yes. With those, the reason I get wound up about VAR and I'm going on this tangent is these are the slight things in the game that could be ignored or let go if the referee doesn't see it. The baby things that get missed. But now with VAR and everything's under this major microscopic scrutiny, we're just nitpicking everything. And I think it's embarrassing and I think it's terrible. I think VAR is a great thing for overturning major decisions that were wrong, like the Liverpool offsides like last year. Or was that 2 years ago?
I think it was two or three seasons ago.
Yeah. I know. They all merged together. I think there's a lot of major incorrect errors that VAR has been great for. But I also am doing this rant because I think that we're also getting microscopic and picky. Just like the last goal where it worked in our favor at the end of the game today. But I'd be a hypocrite to say that was ridiculous.
Yeah. And we can fast forward to the end of the game. I mean, really, on the West Ham end of things, nothing happened after our goal. I mean, we didn't create hardly anything. I mean, it was a long 45 minutes for us. And then a great, delicious ball comes in from Jack Grealish. And then Ollie Watkins slots it home. Now, that would have made it 2-2 in the 92nd minute. And then VAR pulls it back for an offside. He was offside by the Premier League badge on his sleeve, and it took so long because you could see that he was just in front of Ogbonna. You could see that, but Sofal's arm almost held him onside. I mean, it was microscopically offside.
Well, they had to check Ogbonna because it was by his foot, though, right?
Correct. Yeah, he was just in front
right.
of his.
So they still had to check it because if his foot was out there, and even though his Ollie Watkins' body was out there, I just. we're talking about millimeters that I again, I'd be a hypocrite to say, like, yes, it worked out and I'm glad we got the 3 points and I'm really excited. And I thought that we, you know, didn't really deserve 3 points, but it is what it is. That's what happens when you're on a roll and some luck goes your way. But I would feel extremely hard done. I mean, it goes back to the Antonio penalty against Sheffield.
Yeah. And
I mean, the goal called back. I think these microscopic VAR decisions even out in a bad way.
No, I agree. I totally agree. And as I was saying, the reason it took so long is because they could tell easily that Ogbonna, he was definitely in front of Ogbonna, but looking up the pitch took a little longer just because they were trying to line up with Sofal. I think you're spot on. Normally, and again, I'm fast forwarding to the end of the game, but normally I would be buzzing. I mean, absolutely buzzing after a win. And I'm happy, don't get me wrong. But that felt so grimy. Like, it didn't feel right to me. Like,
I feel like a cheat.
I was watching with a Villa fan, and, you know, I would love to be giving it to him, saying, like, oh, we deserved it. We played well. But it didn't feel right. Like, it didn't – like, it felt like they deserved at least a point. We probably deserved to lose that game off the way we played.
Yeah.
If you look at the game as a whole,
yeah.
We probably deserved to lose. But again, good teams find ways to win sometimes, and you got to win ugly. But I just think with the VAR decisions, with offside, it's so hard to know what to do. Now, you've seen brought up this week that I think the Dutch do a 10-centimeter rule where you get a 10-centimeter cushion, which, again, I don't know how that works. I don't know how practical that is. And again, we're just talking about VAR, but and I hate that we're not actually talking about the game all that much. We're talking about VAR. But for me, I would almost rather the referee, and I've probably said this a million times or a few at least, the referee should go and look at the monitor. If the referee can't tell for certain if he's offside or onside, within 10, 15 seconds of looking at that screen with the still image of when the ball was played and how the players lined up when that ball was played, if he can't tell with the naked eye that is factually offside or onside, you stick with whatever decision on the pitch was, and you have to go with that. And again, we benefited from it, so I'm really pleased that we got 3 points and we won the game. But, you know, this VAR thing is just killing the game, and I think that phrase is overused, but I'm really starting to people are starting to fall out of love with the game because of this stuff, and it's really, really sad to see.
I'm a little annoyed with you because you kind of took where I was going, but I want to expand on it or give another live example. You know, we talk about the NFL. You don't see the NFL using goal line technology, or you don't see NFL drawing lines and doing stuff like that. They look at the video. If they can make the decision that it's confirmed, stands, or overturned, and that's it. There's no... where does the arm touch the leg, touch the in front of this and that, and drawing lines, and well, this pixel's here and that pixel's there, and you know, they just look at the video, and if they can make a decision, it's confirmed, stands, or overturned. And I would like to see that be the way that VAR goes for the Premier League. I think a lot of this eensy-weensy stuff, I just don't like it. I really don't like it. I think it feels slimy. I think it feels shitty, even if they get the right call. It doesn't feel natural.
Yeah, like I believe earlier in the day today, there was a penalty for Fulham. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about? Did you see the penalty?
No, I saw Fulham scored their penalty, but
they scored their penalty. But in this case, there was a penalty that wasn't given on the pitch.
Yes, I did see it. And he pushed the ball.
It was actually
past the defender. Yeah,
it was actually the right decision to bring it back. And I thought that was justice because there was definitely a foul in the area, and Fulham were awarded the penalty off of the foul. And I think there are circumstances where VAR works. It just feels like the overwhelming majority of instances we're talking about are ticky-tack or minor, where decisions that we probably weren't going to really argue with much anyway if we didn't have the technology. Like, if that goal would have stood, the Ollie Watkins goal, and Match of the Day was replaying the replay, I don't think a ton of West Ham fans would have been up in arms about being an offside. The players on the pitch did think it was offside. Ogbonna and Balbuena both had their arms raised like they thought he was offside.
They didn't know.
But that's just a guess.
Yeah.
That's just them hoping that he's offside.
They didn't know.
And we get into a whole different region of VAR-ness, which, again, I don't know how this works. I would love to be able to talk with a referee and ask him this. But if you look at just before the ball was played, you could make an argument that Ogbonna is wrestling Watkins and fouling him inside the area before the ball was played. And if that's the case, is that a penalty and not offside? And Dean Smith was ranting about this in his post-game presser. He was saying it's either a goal or a foul, because he was being fouled in the build-up to the goal. Which I think he has a minor point. He probably has a point, and I know he definitely feels hard done by because he got screwed over by the offside decision. But is Ogbonna fouling him in the area before the ball is played? It's just another layer that adds to, and they weren't looking at that. They were only looking at if he was offside or not. And I'm just saying
almost
everything.
Like the, can I interrupt you real quick? Because just to relay off that, almost like the Pickford Van Dijk situation.
Yeah, similar.
Where Pickford absolutely murdered Van Dijk, but Van Dijk was offside.
Right.
Is it Van Dijk or is that Salah?
No, it was Van Dijk. Right. It was when he tore his ACL. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in this case,
like, yo, that's a foul.
In this case, they were looking. Well, the Dean Smith and the fans were arguing that Ogbonna was fouling him before the offside, therefore, it should have been a penalty and not a goal, and therefore not offside. We're going to this point where we're micromanaging every little thing that's going on, and we're not talking about the game anymore. We're just talking about VAR, and that's the sad thing. That's what I didn't foresee this. Some people did. I mean, some people did think that this was a possibility. I was just like, God, I'm tired of West Ham getting screwed week in, week out on these terrible refereeing decisions, and I'm sure once it goes away, if it goes away, we will be moaning about a few decisions that were obvious that went against us again. But I think having learned from this, I will be okay with the fact that we don't have VAR anymore and it's not ruining the game as much. And don't get me wrong, when I was at Bournemouth on Boxing Day and Bobby Madley made that horrendous decision, that ruined that day. But I think I'll take those sour moments, and I think there'll be fewer of them with the no VAR. I don't know if you agree with that, but.
Well, I want to say 2 points to that. One is it goes back to my rant where I just said that we're looking at everything on a microscopic level of every little dink, every little clip, every little touch in the box. And I think it's just ridiculous. I don't think everything is a penalty. I think people would argue that a foul in the box is a penalty, right?
Right.
If it's a foul outside the box, it's a foul inside the box. And I don't agree with that. I know Andy, oh, if he still listens to our podcast, our buddy Andy would tell me I'm the biggest idiot in the world and I sound ridiculous because a foul is a foul anywhere, blah, 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 the letter of the law bullshit. But I genuinely think that if there's a foul in the box, I think it needs to be nice background. I think that if there's a foul in the box, it needs to be worth a penalty. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Some of these quote fouls in the box are worth a spot kick. You know, I just get so angry with that. The second point I want to make real quick though is to your Bournemouth situation, yeah, where you say, oh, maybe it would have been nice that we had VAR that day that ruined it for you. I also think, and this is going to sound crazy, but you and I have been to a bunch of terrible, terrible West Ham matches, right? Like, yeah, terrible. And whether it was VAR or not, like we just either played poorly or it was a heartbreaker. But that almost adds to the authenticity of being a West Ham fan, you know? Like, you had that amazing experience of being at Bournemouth and you got your heart broken and were robbed. And you'll always talk about that story. What is that, 4 or 5 years now?
Yep. And that's a big argument is
you'll always have that.
The pub talk is what people thought that we would lose with VAR, which we haven't lost. We're all just bitching about it at the pub, about how terrible VAR is.
Well, I guess my argument is that you'll forever have that terrible memory, but also like special because you were there. You had that experience. Like, I'll never forget my first ever Spurs away game where Harvard Nordvite, you know, we're up 1-0 in the 89th minute, first ever London Derby away. And it was crazy. Sky made it a night game, right? And I mean, people were absolutely pissed up. It was hostile walking down coming out of Seven Sisters. You know, it was one of the craziest games I've ever been to. It was incredible, right? But I'll never forget us being 1-0 up and then losing that game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I guess back to the Bournemouth thing was where maybe it would have been nice to have VAR. You'll always have that memory, whether it's good or bad.
That's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. Have you seen the stats? Have you looked at the stats of this game now that we're wrapping it up? Have you seen the stats?
No. Surprise me. Then I'll give you my instant reaction. So
go on. So possession was, and again, stats mean nothing. To me, most of the time, stats mean nothing. But
I'm a stats guy.
Villa had 66% of the ball, which I'm not really surprised by that. They outshot us 16-6. That sounds about right. They created 15 chances to our 7. They had 3 big chances to our 1 big chance, which I guess really should have been 2 because we scored on 2 of them. But do you want to know how many the shots on target?
Yeah, well, you're going to tell me regardless, so go on.
West Ham had 2 shots on target, and they both went in.
Yeah.
Villa had 6 shots on target, so you could
efficiency.
Let's go positive.
We're going to go glass half full, probably.
You look at this, and if you didn't see the score, you would definitely have said Villa should have not drawn the game, won the game, but they end up losing. I would say the better team lost tonight. I think that's fair to say. And again, I normally don't read anything into stats after a game, and it doesn't matter at the end of the day because we have 2 goals to their 1, so the stats doesn't matter. All I'm saying is, I think these stats would feed into the argument that we were second best tonight.
These are the games in FIFA when you break controllers.
Yes, 100%.
When you, if you're a Villa fan, if this was a game of FIFA, I would have definitely broke a controller, which I will be honest, I did break one last week. If anyone ever wants to play FIFA on PlayStation, it's COYIUSA 93. That's my PlayStation. I play a lot of FIFA. But yeah, these are the games that get broken controllers. These are the games that are heartbreak if you're a Villa fan. And I'm glad that we're doing this podcast for the first time in 6 weeks, coming away with 3 points, and we're not Villa fans.
Yeah. Totally agree. So right before the game kicked off, we actually had the FA Cup draw, and West Ham were one of the highlighted draws of the round, I would say, because we drew Stockport County of the National League. We're away at Stockport. I know most West Ham fans are really, really, really sad that fans can't go because, again, like our friend Andy, who that would actually be a new ground for, who goes to West Ham home and away, has I don't know how many grounds unlocked on Groundhopper, but this would be a new West Ham ground for him, and I'm sure 95% of West Ham fans would be their first chance to see them play. They're currently sitting in the National League, which is technically non-league football, which is pretty crazy in the fifth division. So what did you think about the draw?
I'm excited. I'm excited that it's away as well. I love watching the smaller grounds and the way that their stadiums are built, the way that their grounds are kept, sometimes torn up pretty bad. Like I liked when we played Wimbledon away and we played Was it Accrington? No. Goodness me. Now I just sound like an idiot. Anyway, you know, I love watching the away games. I think one of my, again, I always like to bring up my memories to make it a little more personal. I got to see us play Cheltenham in the League Cup away. That was cool. That was the smallest ground I've ever been to in the English leagues. So that was a cool experience. And I'm pretty disappointed that we're not going to get to go. I'm not going to get to see Stockport. You people aren't going to get to go. But I think it's a great draw. I think it's a winnable game, obviously.
Obviously.
However, I've seen us also get bounced by third and fourth division sides and play horrible. So who absolutely knows? And I can almost guarantee you it's going to be on BBC, BT, or I think those are the two. I don't think Sky has any FA Cup games.
Don't know. But hopefully that means it'll be on ESPN Plus over. Actually, every FA Cup game is on ESPN Plus, isn't it? So we'll have it either way over here. But Stockport currently sit 12th in the National League. So I mean, not blazing form. That's right in the middle of the table. They have 23 teams in the National League. It's definitely going to be their cup final. I guarantee you they're up for it.
Absolutely.
We should in theory easily win this game, but you can't take any team lightly in this tournament, and I think we still have to put out a fairly strong team and go for it from the get.
We need to be very, very careful with this game, because let me tell you why. I was watching the FA Cup draw, and they had a Stockport player. I'm not sure if he was the captain or not, but they had a Stockport player on the pre-draw coverage on the BBC One. And I'll tell you what, he was like, "We want Manchester United." I was like, well, damn, if they're that confident, they'll be ecstatic to draw loss. So they're going to be ready for this game. And I know it's in January, so we got a bit of way to go. But I don't think we should take this lightly. I would love an FA Cup run. But where we are in the table, I want to add, is also very concerning to me regarding our FA Cup run, because our second team should walk all over this side. However, I want an FA Cup run. I want to see our first team every single round in the FA Cup. And I'm not sure that would happen even if we advance past Stockport. If we stay this high up in the table, the money for Europe compared to the FA Cup, they're gonna field soft sides in that.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I actually I have a friend of mine, Matt Bird, who's a St. Louis FC fan, who's actually from the UK. His main team, I guess you would say, is Man United, which, shocker. I believe he's from the Manchester area, and I'm assuming he's a Stockport fan as well. So I am assuming he's from that area. So it's cool that I know a Stockport fan. But I think it's just a cool draw for us, and if hopefully it's not one of the FA Cup magical nights, so to speak. Thankfully. Or not thankfully, there's not going to be fans there. Because, you know, like, usually when we go to places like Wimbledon, you know, the fans are right up for it.
And right on top of you in those grounds.
Exactly.
We're not used to that, the London
maybe
Stadium.
There will be a little less pressure on West Ham to win that game. But again, they're certainly going to be up for it, Stockport. And the other draw of the round I thought was so cool was seeing Marine draw Spurs at home. And for those who don't know, Marine are an eighth division team, so they're three divisions below Stockport County. That's glorified Sunday League football. I mean, it really is it's on the edge of Sunday League football. And
that's the Harrisburg City Islanders right there.
That's lower than that.
Lower than that.
That's low.
Yeah, that would be
that, because Harrisburg City, they played in the USL, which is the quote unquote second division over here, but they're professionals.
That'd be like Lone this Star is like, FC or something.
This is like me and you, not necessarily me and you, but athletic people playing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, speak for yourself, my boy, because my titties be bouncing when I run, so that's definitely not me playing out there.
There was a picture. I don't know if you saw the picture of the Marine goalkeeper after they won. Going to the off license and getting beers for the lads. And it's still in his full goalkeeper kit after the game.
All of our New York listeners, the off license is the bodega, the corner store.
It's the corner shop. Yep. It's just such a cool story, man. And the fact that Jose Mourinho is going to have to go and manage there, which I'm sure they're going to make a big publicity thing out of it. It's a shame that they didn't draw at Spurs, because I'm sure that would have been the game of the lifetime for those guys to get to go and play at the new Tottenham Stadium. It's a shame there's no fans going to be there. I think that's really disappointing. I don't know what kind of side Mourinho will put out. I'm guessing it's going to be an academy team practically. But I still think it's one of the coolest stories that I can remember in the FA Cup. An eighth division team. I believe Marine have had to play four or five games. They had to win all these games in a row to get to where they are right now. And that is an incredible feat. And I just wanted to bring it to everyone's attention if you didn't know already. Because I fucking love the FA Cup. And I think it's one of the coolest stories that you'll find.
I think it's going to be funny. And I can just imagine. It brings me to the scenes in my head. Do you remember? Did you ever watch the movie The Damned United?
I have seen it. It's been a really long time. And I just don't know
one
why. I've heard it's a great movie, and I know I've seen it. I just can't remember it off the top of my head.
Fantastic movie. Definitely everyone should go watch it. The Damned United is probably one of the best football movies, in my opinion. You know, I'm always a big fan of Goal, but, you know, I think Damned United's better. Anyway, long story short, it just reminds me of the scene when Brian Clough was so excited to have the Leeds United manager come to his ground in the FA Cup, and the Leeds United manager just really didn't even care and was like, this ground sucks. And, you know, Brian Clough made the dressing room look beautiful and stuff. And they were like, couldn't give a damn at all. And it just reminds me of that. And Mourinho going to this eighth division side ground, the dressing room is probably the size of like a freaking closet, you know. And
yeah,
when Spurs' dressing room at Tottenham at White Hart Lane's probably like an NFL locker room.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks like their stadium on the far side is just houses. It's a really cool backdrop. It's just houses on one side of the pitch. I think it's just going to be really, really cool, and I am very excited to watch that that matchup, because I think, they're probably going to get – it's probably not going to be no contest, and Marina probably lose by quite a bit. But
you
again,
never know.
You never know, and that's the magic of the FA Cup. So yeah, that's absolutely One thing I just wanted to talk about. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about this week?
No, I think we don't really even have any podcast news other than our same bullshit. Hey guys, we're gonna try and be more common, and we do genuinely mean it. I just want everyone to understand, and I don't want to sound like a beggar or nothing, but we don't get paid for this. And bro, if you want to take this out, that's fine. But I just want everyone to understand that we do this for fun. We do this because we care about our listeners. But at the same time, we're not in a position where this makes us any money. So our regular lives honestly do come first sometimes. So if you don't hear us for 6 weeks, you know, all we can do is apologize and say, hey, we'll try to do better. But the real is, you know, Brawley got some big life decisions coming up. I don't know if you think you announced it on the pod before?
Yeah, I've talked about it, yeah.
Oh, okay, I wasn't sure. That's very personal. Brawley's got a baby on the way. I have a very intense job, and I'm looking at buying a house. So, you know, we're very, very busy people. However, at the same time, you know, we're going to try and do better. So we thank everyone who's stuck with us this far and this many years. I mean, coming up in January, Brawley, you know, we started this, what, a few days after the protests.
Yeah.
This is the Burnley game. Yeah, so this is coming up on almost – come January, it will be our fourth year, starting our
third
fourth year, right?
Third year, I think, yeah. Year three. I think we started in
– I thought this was our third year.
No, we started in January of 2018. So 19-20, this will be 21 coming up, and this will be year three.
Regardless, you know, I just want everyone to understand that we do – we're thankful from our American West Ham podcast days to our partners at the West Ham Way USA. Thank you to Dave and X. And we really appreciate everyone who listens. So I know that was a mini Kodak rant, but I just wanted to say it means a lot, and thank you all for sticking with us. And we know that there's a lot of other options out there, trust us. But, you know, all we can say is we're very thankful to our loyal fan base.
Yep. And I've been having my house renovated. I mean, I've literally had to gut the upstairs of my house and completely redo it for in preparation of the baby. And work starting to pick up a lot, too. So we just thank everyone for being patient with us and not harassing us for a new episode every week because
we're
just very busy. And then, yeah, you guys, the numbers continue to be good, so we certainly appreciate all of you guys.
Yep, so that's what I have this week. I don't have anything else other than I'm about to go cook myself some dinner. So, Brawley, can you take us out on the shit that I always mess up?
Yep. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at West Ham Way US Pod. If you guys would please go and leave us a 5-star rating and review, please go and do that. We just want to get higher in the charts and reach more listeners, and that really helps that happen. You can follow me on Twitter at Brawley Darbin. You can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Clark Dupe. We do have a game on Saturday coming up against Manchester United. It'll actually be the first Premier League game with fans in attendance. There will be 2,000 fans in attendance for. Although I have talked to quite a few season ticket holders, and I know this is supposed to be the end of the pod, and I'm going on a little bit.
Sorry, yeah, we didn't even talk about that.
A few people in the draw, so to speak, and I know quite a few of them are saying they almost hope they don't get selected because they're not sure if it's actually going to be worth going. Because they say, you know, you go for the atmosphere, you don't really go for the game. I mean, you do go for the game, but a lot of what you're going for is the atmosphere, and obviously that won't be there. So I think it's going to be a weird time, but it's certainly a positive thing to see fans returning to the stadium. Even if there's only 2,000 of them, it's still going to feel virtually empty. I think it's a good thing. And quite frankly, it's something to be celebrated in these dark times. And I think that's a baby step towards normalcy. And I'm sick of seeing all the people bitching about it. Oh, only 2,000 people, only 2,000 people. It's like, well, you got to start somewhere. And I think baby steps.
Crawl before you ball, you know.
Yeah, baby steps are better than no steps at all. So I'm excited to see the return of fans being able to sing bubbles as players walk out on the pitch. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but if not,
no, it'll be exciting to see. And I will say one last thing. God damn, I did watch the non-fake crowd today, and I thought it was actually really enjoyable. So,
oh, so you selected the no crowd noise feed? I was watching on TV, so
yeah, I didn't get that. It was really interesting. Okay, yeah, but that's all I got. So yeah, so thanks again, everybody.
We'll talk to you guys after the Man United game, hopefully coming back at you with 3 points. So until then, we'll see you guys later.
Irons.